it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, September 15th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hartz. White House says it has reached a deal with China to shift TikTok to U.S. control. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, Fed policy, retail sales, and housing data headline a busy week on Wall Street. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is indeed Fed Week. We will have a decision on interest rates as of Wednesday afternoon. And if the Fed does follow through with the anticipated quarter point interest rate cut, and that kicks off a cycle of cutting rates at each successive meeting, what is that going to do as far as the Fed accomplishing its dual mandate?
Well, that's a very good question because, you know, I was just, kind of chuckling over the market report you just had where we were told that the job market is weakening and inflation is modest. Well, inflation is nearly a percentage point over its target, and it's been that way for, or worse, for 4 years. People seem to be very, very blasé about the Fed hitting its 2% inflation target. Inflation is more like 3%. It isn't falling anymore. The unemployment rate, on the other hand, is still in a sweet spot, still where economists think full employment is. And yet the Federal Reserve seems to want to take steps to try to keep the unemployment rate where it is, to keep it from rising if they think that's a risk. And they want to take further chances with letting the inflation rate go up, particularly at a time where we still have tariffs working through the system that are likely to cause inflation to rise. So, you know, the problem is not the job market. The problem is really with the inflation rate. And although we had an employment report that was weaker than expected, over a month ago, with this new revised labor data, we don't find that so surprising anymore. You know, they revised ordinary job growth down from 140,000 a month to 75,000 a month. So when you fall from 75,000 to 25,000, well, that's not such a big fall. And it's only 1 month. So I think there's a lot of thinking that people need to do and a lot less knee-jerking that people ought to be doing.
Well, tomorrow we do have the report on retail sales, which is going to be another kind of checkpoint on the state of the consumer, who has more or less been able to spend through everything the economy has thrown at them over the past 4 years.
Right. Well, we're looking for, you know, modest increases in retail sales on the order of 0.4% or so, small increases in real terms. Not looking for much in terms of industrial production, also a number due tomorrow. And the Home Builders Index, we'll see what's going on with housing. Mortgage rates have been coming down, and so we have the possibility of seeing some improvement in that index. And then, you know, for the rest of the week, we're looking at some housing starts data, leading indicators, and then eventually that Fed meeting coming up.
And then when we have the Fed meeting on Wednesday, I mean, outside of the interest rate announcement itself, what are you going to be looking for in Chairman Powell's comments in the news conference afterwards?
Well, like everybody, we'll be looking for evidence of any kind of guidance for the future, whether he'll just keep saying that we've cut rates and that we're still data dependent, or whether we've taken a step to cut rates and we're still concerned about the job market. You know, how is he going to characterize it? And then, of course, the question is going to be, what's the next data report going to be like, and what's inflation going to do? You know, because all of these all of this guidance that the Fed gives us from time to time can be undone by data. If we all of a sudden start getting bigger inflation numbers, if the job numbers don't look like they've weakened, if it turns out we had a weak spot in the summer and it comes back, which often happens with job numbers, the Fed can find itself in a very different spot. We know there's pressure from the president. We know what he wants. But, you know, the president doesn't always get what he wants from the Fed.
Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Trump administration says the U.S. and China have struck a framework deal to shift TikTok into U.S.-controlled ownership, with final terms to be confirmed on Friday. Joining us now with the latest is Carrie Flynn, media reporter for Axios in New York. Carrie, thank you for joining us today. And one of the buzzwords of the second Trump administration thus far has been framework. We have the framework of a tariff deal. We have the framework for an agreement. And now we have the framework for a deal to shift TikTok into U.S.-controlled ownership. What do we know about this framework so far?
Unfortunately, very little. Key details are missing in what exactly this deal looks like, and importantly, who exactly is buying TikTok's U.S. operations. So it's wild that, let me remind you that this is 5 years coming. It was way back in August 2020 that Trump passed executive order to want to ban TikTok. Again, so long. TikTok has been on the brink of being banned under law, that law that passed in 2022. And again, that required ByteDance, its Chinese owner, to divest U.S. assets over national security concerns. So the question is, if China is divesting them, who is buying? Who has control? We do not know at this moment who. The likely expected winner of the bid is Oracle's Larry Ellison. But again, cannot be confirmed. I'm very much hoping we learn on Friday.
Now, this is a very interesting month for the Ellison family. They've already closed on CBS and Paramount Pictures. That deal is already underway. They're potentially mulling a bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. And now they could potentially have their hands on TikTok. So it seems like the Ellison family is really in the business of cornering all modes of communication in the United States.
Correct. It's wild to think how much could be under control of the Ellison family. You know, I'm a media reporter and I see TikTok as a media company, right? It's where publishers and where people's attention is spent. And so you're seeing, yes, the Ellison family now runs Paramount. They're wanting to potentially do a deal, a massive deal with Warner Bros. Discovery. Now having TikTok, that's a lot of content, a lot of people's time and attention. But what they see too is taking on the other big tech giants like Meta and also on the streaming landscape like Netflix, right? A lot of where we spend our time. Putting all this together, having Paramount and Warner Bros. Is also wild, but add TikTok, that again is a lot of people's attention. But I will just note again, we don't know for sure that Larry or that the Ellison family will have this, but we do know that he has the money, the family has Trump's backing, and they also have an existing relationship through Oracle hosting TikTok's data in the U.S.
Now, what's interesting about where TikTok is in the media landscape, I'm sure you have seen this as well, but it comes out on all sorts of social media feeds once a month, is the pie chart that from Nielsen that basically delineates who has been watching what, whether it's broadcast TV, cable TV, and then a breakdown of all of the iShare of various streaming services. And of course, YouTube TV rules the roost on this particular pie chart. But what some observers have said is that it doesn't really factor into TikTok. And when you factor that in, when you look at the number of minutes that millions of people devote to TikTok, it could potentially be bigger than TV.
Correct. The app boasts 170 million American users. That's a huge base of people. And we know young people as well. There was talked about that TikTok actually played a big role in Trump's 2024 election win. And that's thought of why he reversed his stance on wanting to keep TikTok. And he even said, he posted on Truth Social right before we got more details on the deal, that us certain company that young people in our country very much want to save is this deal. So Trump knows that that is where a lot of attention is, and perhaps that's why we'll see it going forward. And yeah, it's interesting that TikTok positions itself as an entertainment company. I mentioned Paramount. I mentioned Warner Brothers. I mentioned Netflix. TikTok is an alternative to that. It's where you spend your time. I know myself personally, I can say I spend a lot of time on that app. I also post myself on it. And it's again, a great place for news and information. And that's where you're seeing publishers and just people spend more time on there.
Carrie Flynn, media reporter for Axios in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, retirees are returning to work, and it's about more than just money. We'll go in depth on that next.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A lot of retirees are returning to the workforce, not just for financial reasons, but also for purpose, social connection, and new opportunities. Joining us to discuss is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern Insurance. Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And when we talk about retirees returning to the workforce, we're not talking about a retiree returning to his or her office maybe months or perhaps a year after the big retirement going away shindig. Maybe they're just getting a different job that stimulates a different part of their brain.
Sure. You know, you've got a lot of things that people have to deal with when they actually experience retirement. The desire to be engaged and fewer ways to do that. Your social network, which for most people in the United States, very large part of your social network has been the people that you commute with and know at work. Some cognitive and even physical decline or awareness. People live longer. If you live longer, that's great. But you know what? You need more money when you live longer. And I think you find there's things that you've always wanted to do, and this is a chance if you're brave enough to go out and try it.
And speaking of trying it, this is something we talked about last week, and that is people maybe doing a mini retirement or just trying it out or seeing how they like it before they actually take the plunge. And getting that job in retirement, whether it's full-time or part-time, is that part of the process of learning about what your life is like when you don't have to get up in the morning and go to work?
Yeah, I can speak from experience. Yeah, it absolutely is. You go out and you try stuff and you go, okay, well, I can do that and I enjoyed it. But, a couple of things. One, it took a ton of time. Wasn't really rewarding to me. And my paycheck for the week was the equivalent of what I made an hour. So there's all those things kind of line up. This is not scratching the itch that I have.
And then also, what are some of the physical effects of continuing to work in some form or fashion after you have actually retired? Because just getting up and getting around and engaging your brain and still being physically active, even though you're technically retired, that could actually add a few years onto your life.
It's such a critical element of getting older. The one thing that we know, and it's been proven medically and sociologically for years now, is that the feeling of being needed, feeling relevant, and feeling valued extends one's life. It's just a fact. And so the other part of that is, up and moving, if you want to just get the basics of a metric, walking 5 to 7 days a week it gives you an additional 4 years of life expectancy, and your mobility, your physical impairments are much less. So getting around, commuting to work, getting engaged. The one thing that I think you have to watch out for when you get older is, you have to avoid the "you kids get off my lawn" reaction to things, because the one thing we struggle with as you get older is adapting to change. And so we have to make sure we keep our minds open to the new concepts and ways of doing things. But it's gonna let you live longer and see the world probably happen through younger eyes.
And then how many people, when they elect to retire, they say, "Well, I'm going to keep my hand in the business as a consultant." And what are some of the questions you have to ask yourself before you hang up your shingle as a consultant?
Well, the thing about work is if you are really good at something, then that's going to be 80% of your activity. And when you're a consultant, you might be great at consulting on something. Let's say you're great at advertising, But that's not what you're going to do. You're going to spend 80% of your time trying to find business, because the part that you're not good at is the part that you'll spend all of your time. So you have to think about that. The other part of it is when you're presenting yourself as a solution for people, they don't know you, they don't care. So you have to say, okay, what is it that I can do? Who would want something like that? How can I articulate what it is that I'm able to do, what differences I can make in an organization? And can I make sure that I articulate that in a way that the person who might need it would actually care about it?
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, convenience stores are gaining breakfast customers at the expense of fast food chains.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are mixed. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Kultbaum, President, Kultbaum Capital Management in Orlando. Find him online at GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And I want to kick off by talking about Tesla. CEO Elon Musk doing something that so many of us have done before, and that is buying $1 billion worth of stock in his own company. What message is that sending to the broader market?
Well, typically it states, well, for Tesla, that he has belief in it. But I've written about insider buying and selling throughout my lifetime, and $1 billion to somebody worth $400 billion, a billion's a lot, but on a comparison basis, not that big. But the market loves it. The fact of the matter is, the stock broke out last week, and getting some more out of that today. And nothing bad really happens when you hear the richest man in the world spending $1 billion on his own stock, and that's basically what's happening here. And as far as the rest of the market, it's just been NASDAQ-like. When Oracle announced their numbers and the spending, I can tell you that data storage, data centers, the semiconductors, equipment, and the like, all have gone north because of that, and continues today.
And then another cause for optimism, this is from President Trump, who said that trade negotiations between the U.S. and China were going well. We did have the announcement about the framework for a potential U.S. acquisition of TikTok. So when it comes to negotiating these trade deals in an era of higher tariffs, it seems like markets are reacting positively to that.
Yeah, I've said all along, it's not the trade deals, it's the tariffs. You know what happened when they did the Liberation Day? They got rid of that quickly because the markets were cratering. And the good news is, we still have tariffs, but was it not like near that? The trade deal's fine and dandy. If a country's going to spend here, terrific. If we get better deals, terrific. But for me, it's always been about the tariffs. Why? It was a big tax hike on the consumer as well as business here. And the fact that's been pulled back a lot is good news, and let's hope it stays that way.
And, of course, this is Fed week. We are going to potentially get a quarter of a percentage point interest rate cut. And are the fundamentals lining up with that view? Is the 10-year yield agreeing with that stance?
Well, the best news is the 10-year yield has gone from 4.3 down to almost 4.0, and nothing bad happens when yields come down like that. So definitely it's given Jay Powell room. I think I've said all along, if I was running the Fed, I'd be 3.75 right now, which is a half point lower. I don't know what he's going to do. My guess is a quarter point. The president's already said he's expecting something big. That way, if he only does a quarter, he can keep blasting him going forward. But for me, the big story is the real yields. That's your mortgages. That's your loans. And they've been backing down a little bit. And let's hope that continues.
Gary Culpaum, President, Culpaum Capital Management in Orlando. Find him online at GaryK.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, fast food outlets faced increased pressure in the morning from convenience stores.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Food-forward convenience stores are stealing fast food breakfast customers in a big way. Joining us to explain is R.J. Hadavi, Head of Analytical Research at the Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And this is interesting, and I'm sure you have numbers to back this up, but it always seems like breakfast is the toughest nut to crack in terms of getting new customers to shift their brand loyalty, because that is the time of day, at least as it is in my experience, where people are the most habit-driven. It's so hard to knock someone out of their breakfast routine.
Yeah, you're right. And we did see some of that routine change through the pandemic with people going into the office less. We saw people started to make breakfast more at home. But you're right. You know, when you do have a affinity to one brand in the morning, you know, whether it be a QSR chain or even a convenience store chain, tend to be loyal to it. But I think in the last couple of years with inflation and other things, we've seen a little bit of that behavior shift. Some of these food forward convenience stores like a Buc-ee's, a Sheetz, Wawa, and Casey's are really the group that most people consider to be among that group. You know, what we've seen is a lot of new innovation of that breakfast day part, competitive pricing. And as a result, I think we are starting to see some of that behavior change.
Now, it's interesting you rattle off some of those brands, especially Buc-ee's is 500 miles away from Chicago right now. And Sheetz and Wawa are two ways in which Pennsylvanians divide each other, but not necessarily big Chicago brands, even though Buc-ee's is trying to make a play into Wisconsin. But how does that really shape the Chicago market in terms of people's convenience store choices? Because convenience store food across the country has improved greatly in quality over time.
It really has. It's improved in a lot of ways. I think they've taken the baton from quick service restaurants in terms of new menu innovation, in terms of digital ordering. You know, a lot of times you can order ahead at a convenience store. A lot of times you can get it delivered. And so in a lot of ways, they've really become the innovators in the category here. Now, in terms of Chicago, there are some chains that we're starting to see do some interesting things in terms of innovation. And, you know, while this group of food forward names are kind of the ones people point to, I think there's a lot of groups that are starting to do interesting things in the market here. I mean, 7-Eleven's doing a lot of interesting things. They've got a heavy presence in the market here. So I think that we're seeing it more and more, not just these food forward names. It's a really across the board, and it has been a lot of competition at that breakfast day part for quick service restaurants. And frankly, they haven't recovered to where they were pre-pandemic at this point.
And a lot of these convenience stores or gas station convenience stores have upped their food offerings because people don't go in for that pack of smokes anymore. We're smoking less, and they're losing money on tobacco and lottery tickets and even gas too, with so many people buying electric cars. So what's how does a convenience store adapt? Well, they serve better coffee.
Sure. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a blurring of the lines between quick service restaurants and C-stores at this point. In a lot of ways, they are starting to look very similar. And, you know, this is kind of what leads us to what we discussed last week with Racetrack's proposed acquisition of Potbelly. There's a lot of chains in the gas station and C-store category that are now looking to up their game, really introduce new food products that will be a main driver of visits to the stores. You're right. We've changed behavior. And I think that food is really becoming the way that convenience stores, fresh food in particular, is really becoming a major driver for a lot of convenience store chains in this environment.
Now, with this pressure on the breakfast day part coming from convenience stores, did that play a role in Portillo's decision to shelve their own breakfast efforts, or were there other factors at play?
There were probably some other factors at play. I think that was really kind of a learning process for them more than anything else. They may come back to the breakfast day part at some point. But as you pointed out, this has been a tough day part for a lot of quick service restaurant chains to crack. And the amount of chains that have tried to get a footprint in here and then ultimately end up going a different direction is a pretty long list at this point. I mean, really, McDonald's is one of the few names out there that has really been able to crack the code for quick service restaurants. And you know, the attraction's there. I mean, it's a high margin business line. It helps extend the hours of the restaurant. You get, you know, nice products like coffee in there that really drive profitability. But it is a hard one to drive, get that loyalty at that day part.
With this level of competition taking place in the convenience store space and this turning out to be a fairly lucrative market, would this give those regional brands that we talked about, the Casey's, the Bucky's, the Sheetz and the Wawa's, would that give them the impetus or the inspiration to kind of break out nationally and as above and beyond just being a regional favorites either in the South or the Northeast?
Yeah, I think it is. I think this could be a major impetus to drive unit expansion and start to open up more locations across the country. You know, it's not just kind of localized to where they're seeing it. It's in all the breakfast, you know, the picking up customers at the breakfast day part is something we're seeing in every market they operate. And I think that gives them confidence to potentially go after newer markets and, you know, do the same thing there. So it may not be long before we see some of these brands in the Chicagoland area.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come, a pair of investment ideas from our Monday stock picker.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Stock Picker Monday. Joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the website UpsideStocks.com based in Hammond. Chuck, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Two selections today, starting out with an industrial manufacturing company.
Yes, that company is Vontier. The symbol is VNT. The stock trades for about $43 a share. Its market cap is about $6 billion, so it's right in that small mid-cap area. The company was separated from a larger company, Fortive Corporation, in 2020, and I typically kind of like spinoffs in that they tend, once they're on their own, it's kind of sink or swim, and this stock has been swimming and swimming quite nicely. They make equipment, software, and services for kind of low-tech industries, gas stations, fueling systems, car washes, vehicle repair shops, fleet management, and mobility. So they're kind of a behind-the-scenes player with both software and equipment for those particular industries. The company's made that pay off nicely. They've had nice earnings growth this year. They should have good earnings growth next year. And you can buy the package for less than 14 times its 2025 earnings estimates. So it's a nice value in a interesting space. I kind of like these down and dirty industries for companies that provide services like Vontier. So that's Vontier, VNT. Stock trades for $43 a share.
And the great thing about this segment, Chuck, is the opportunity to teach people about companies that may be behind products that we know very well. And that brings us to our next company, which actually makes a lot of these circuit boards that we see.
That's right. That company is TTM Technologies. The symbol is TTMI. It trades for about $48 a share. The market capitalization is about $5 billion. So again, kind of in that small mid-cap range. And another name that's probably not a household name for your listeners, it flies under the radar, but it's a company that's doing really nice things. They manufacture radio frequency components or RF components, and they make a variety of electronics, and you hinted at they do printed circuit boards as well. The company's earnings estimate trends have been rising quite nicely over the last 60 days, so their earnings their earnings estimates have really good upside momentum, which is important. Earnings per share should be up about 30% this year. Revenue should be up about 15%. The company services some interesting businesses, including data centers, as well as the aerospace and defense industry and medical industry. So they have a real diversified base of customers. And again, it's not the cheapest stock on the block, nor is it the most expensive at 21 times its 2025 earnings estimates. So again, that's TTM Technologies. TTMI is the symbol, trades for about $48 a share. And full disclosure, my firm and our clients own both of these stocks.
And then very quickly, Chuck, now that I got you on the phone, when we talk about this is a very interesting week for the markets because we will have more likely than not an interest rate cut. And what does that mean for the Dow theory?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that impacts what has really been the drag on the Dow theory, and that has been the laggard performance of the Dow Jones Transportation Average. You would think that a cut in rates would help kind of the economically sensitive areas such as the Dow Transports. That hasn't necessarily been the case lately, and you know, they're having kind of a nothing day again today. So it'll be interesting. That's really what we're focused on, is is those Dow transports, and if they can get their act going. And if not, I think that that is a yellow flag anyway for future economic activity.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the website UpsideStocks.com. His selections on this Stock Picker Monday, Vontier, VNT, and TTM Technologies, TTMI.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.